right. At this time, it is my pleasure to introduce Shannon, who joins us from the Stepping Stones Group in Philadelphia.
Hey, guys. I'm Shannon. I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank you guys for having me here. I feel so welcomed. You know, I go to a good number of meetings, but I mean, this is awesome, walking in here and just talking to everybody. And the way you guys are talking, it's, you know, you can tell there's a solution in here, and that's awesome to hear. It really is. It's beautiful. So I have, my sobriety date is May 16th, 2013. I have a sponsor. And my home group is the Stepping Stones. It's in Northeast Philadelphia. And I'm there. I mean, it's a clubhouse, so they have meetings all the time. I'm there a couple times a week, usually. And I love that meeting. It feels like my home. You know, it was the first AA meeting I ever walked into. And that was on a couple days after May 16th. And, you know, I mean, and from that day on, it's funny, I kind of re-met my sponsor at the time there. I was with her in rehab, actually, and she was nuts, and I was nuts, and we just kind of, like, she was the first person I saw when I walked up there, and I remember all the time coming into these rooms, you know, and not just, you know, and I just want to say real quick, this is only my experience, you know. I'm not here to say anything bad about anything at all. Certain things didn't work for me, and this did, you know, but, you know, when I would walk into rooms like this, I would see people that were sober and that seemed to really be doing this thing, and I thought they either didn't drink like me, or they weren't like me, or they wanted it more than me, and sobriety was a gift that I wouldn't have, you know, or didn't want bad enough, and when I saw her there, I remember thinking, like, if she's doing this, something's working, you know, and I don't know what it is, but, you know, God placed her in my life at, like, the right exact moment that I couldn't have put any better, you know, and I couldn't, I mean, I'm just so grateful for that, but, so, you know, I'm here to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, you know, this story of mine, which is just my story, you know. I mean, what happened for me out there, please don't separate yourself if you're new. You know, the things that I relate to you guys may not be, like, the way you drink, but the way you feel when you put it down is so similar to the way I feel and the things inside of me that I can't believe there's a book that describes us, like, so perfectly, like all of us. It's mind-blowing. But so I grew up in Philly. I have three siblings. I have two parents. None of them suffer from alcoholism, at least to my knowledge. You know, none of them drink like I do. Let's say that. I have no idea, but to my knowledge, they do not. You know, I have relatives that maybe one day they'll say they suffer from this thing, but they haven't yet, so that's whatever, it's all good. Either way, you know, not only did I not know, you know, I didn't know what it meant to be sober. I didn't know what it looked like for people trying to get sober. And I didn't know what I suffered from before I put a drink in me, because before I put a drink in me for years, I suffered. You know, I mean, it's funny, because, like, I think about these experiences I have before I ever started drinking, and a lot of it, you know, I have some good memories in there, but I have so many memories of, like, just fear of the dumbest stuff that probably never even happened, you know? Like, I would build these scenarios up in my head, and I'm talking, like, 6 years old, 7 years old, 8 years old, and they were absolutely insane, you know? Like, I remember that. I remember suffering from this fear that they talk about, you know, in the big book at such a young age, to the point where, like, it dictated how I spoke to people, how I didn't speak to people, the friends I had, the friendships I did make or didn't make, you know, the way I handled people around me because of how I was scared of how they would talk to me. My parents, you know, they, it's funny because my mom, I love my mom. She's awesome. She'll still say, after everything I finally learned about my disease, right? And there's a lot I still don't know. When I say that, I mean, there's stuff I'll never know. Right? But I tell her, like, what it means for me to be an alcoholic, what that can consist of, you know? And she's like, you know what? No, like, I think our divorce just hit you at the wrong age. And I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. Because she says, you were such a good kid. You know, I didn't really get in trouble a lot, but I remember things like, if I were to get in trouble, like, the insane amount of fear that was on me, you know? If I were to, like, things like school, I did okay, you know? I was scared to not do okay, you know? So that's just, like, the kind of way that I grew up. It could be perceived as being a good kid. I just remember from my point of view, I was just really scared. So, there was that. I was an athlete growing up too, right? So I'm talking about this alcoholism that was in me before I ever picked up a drink, and this spiritual thing in me too, which I mean, if you would have told me, I mean, I don't know if I would have bought that it was a spiritual thing until maybe the day that I, you know, got sober now. You know, even throughout my drinking and everything and my failed attempts at getting sober and trying to do it my way, if somebody would have told me I had a spiritual deficiency, I didn't see how that could, result in the way that I drank. I wouldn't have put that together. And I may not have believed it either. But I remember, like, this spiritual thing inside me, like, just feeling so disconnected from this world. Like this depression from, like, I'm, like, 12 years old, right? And I don't know why. I didn't have a bad life, you know? Like, I had these two parents that loved me. They got divorced, but, like, I didn't really care, you know? Like, it didn't really bother me all that much. I had these siblings that were awesome. I was okay in school. I was an athlete. Like, I had these things that looked like a really normal life for a kid, and a good one, you know? And I felt useless. I was 12. And I felt, you know, that fear. I felt that disconnected. I didn't have a lot of friendships, or at least I didn't see them as friendships. I always felt like I was on the outside, you know? Like, I would have a group of friends and feel like I was, like, this last resort friend, right? Like, this is my perception being warped, like, before I'm 15 years old. And before I ever put a drink in me, like, I would try to find any way possible to get it for my head to slow down. You know, I hear a lot of speakers sometimes, and they talk about, like these voices in this, like, committee in their head that doesn't shut up, you know? And I mean, like, from the time I was young, it's just, like, that's been there. That's been in me. So anything I could do to quiet that down a little bit, I obsessed over it, you know? And that obsessing got, like, shut up when I finally took a drink, you know? I was, like, 15 or 16 years old, and I went up to my brother's school, and he, you know, he's in college, he's 2 years older than me, so, yeah, I was, like, 15 or 16, and I went up to his school, and I was gonna drink with them, and I was so excited, and I don't even know why, I never drank before, but I was so excited, and I was also really scared. I was scared about what I was gonna wear. I was scared about, you know, here he is with these older friends, and how am I going to talk to them, and how am I going to sound cool, right? Because anytime I would walk up to people, I remember this one time, like, I was with him and his friends, and we were down the shore, and I must have been 14 years old, and there was about 10 of them on the boardwalk, and one of them came, and I mean, and the whole time I'm walking around, and I have these voices in my head, and I'm trying to be cool, and I'm trying to fit in. I'm trying to actually be almost invisible a little bit, you know? I don't want to attract any attention to myself. And this kid comes up, and just, I don't remember what he said to me, because all I remember was his mouth moving and me thinking, what am I going to say back? What am I going to say? To the point where I don't even know what happened, you know? Like, these are the little things that I remember. I couldn't function like a normal person, you know? And when I put a drink in me, that just stopped, you know? All that stuff just kind of quieted down, and I don't know if I was funnier, but I felt funnier, and I don't know if I was cooler, but I felt cooler, and I got along with them that night, and I didn't have these incessant voices in my head that just, that tortured me, you know, that made me miserable, and that took off really quickly. You know, I lived with my dad. I was the only one of my siblings to live with my dad. My mom moved to Bensalem with my two sisters, and when my brother moved back from college, he lived with her, and I drank with my dad, and he didn't see anything wrong with it, you know, or maybe he did, but, you know, we had a good time, and I, you know, still put off that image that I was a smart kid, and I was determined or something like that. I don't know what it was, but he didn't see it as a problem right away. But it got that way pretty quickly. And, so that was it. Just that one day, that whole change in perception, man, like, that's what I was looking for. You know, all of a sudden, once I put that drink in me, like, I couldn't wait to do it again, you know? I felt like that was like the answer to life. Like, I remember feeling enlightened, you know, when I went home that night. And the next day, you know, like, there were all these kids, because, you know, like, I'm 15 and 16, and I have these kids around me in high school at this point that are already drinking, and, you know, and I wouldn't do it for a long time, like I said, because of that fear of getting in trouble and everything, and I was an athlete. Like, I mean, I dedicated a lot of time to softball, like, a lot of time. And, you know, so I had this really bad fear. But once that night happened, none of it mattered anymore. You know, all of a sudden, like, I realized what was going to make me okay. I found something new to obsess about, you know. I found it, you know. And so that's what I did. And teenager growing up in Philly at that time, I'm into all kinds of stuff, you know. Give it 2 years, and I can't get out of bed without feeling sick. It took off really fast, and you know, pretty much from that night on, I mean, almost from that night on, I wasn't sober. But I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know that I had set off something in my body, and maybe, you know, it wasn't as strong as it was when I came in here. But I do know that once that started, that was it. When am I doing it again? When am I doing it again? And maybe about 6 months from then on, excuse me, I woke up on a mission every day. It woke me up. It just was pushing at me, right? Like, I remember wanting to sleep late so bad, you know, because God forbid I wake up and I feel that way. And if I woke up at 6 a.m. feeling that way, it was a hell of a morning. And I remember that, and that went on for a real long time, you know, like, I remember feeling that way and just thinking, like, this is what my life's going to be like, you know, like, and you know why? Also, because those bits of sobriety in there, like, I didn't want them either, you know. Once I started feeling like this is what I needed, and it became a chore, and it became that almost like torturous way to live, that alcoholic torture, you know, take the drink away from me, make me not sick, you know, and sobriety is alcoholic torture too for me, you know. I mean, if you're going to take my drink away, my solution, the thing that calms my head down, I need something quick or I'm going back, and that's just the way it is. So when I was 18, I had already been in my first meeting as a result of an underage drinking, and, you know, and again, like, this is where I say I'm not going to knock anything because it's okay, but it wasn't in AA, you know, but when I went there, you know, this lady, I remember, and you know what, and I am grateful that she, like, really, I'm really grateful that she did this. She made me feel welcome, because I remember walking up to that first meeting being scared to death, you know, maybe 20 minutes sober, and I mean, literally shaking. And she bought me their literature, and she wrote a note inside of it, and she was so nice, and she put her phone number, and she said, don't pick up no matter what. You know, and I mean, and that sounds really good, right? But I am incapable of doing that. You know, I'm incapable of just not picking up no matter what. You know, give me a solution. Give me some direction of how to not pick up no matter what. And if I'm desperate enough, I'm going to do it, you know. But just not picking up is not an answer for me. So I did. Like the next day, I'm sure, you know, maybe that night if I had it, I don't remember. But that's what happened. And I kept going back, and I started to make a lot of friends there, you know, I mean, and I'm going home and I'm drinking and I'm going back and I'm going home and I'm saying, I can't do it. And I'm putting my hand up and I'm sharing, you know, and at this point, you know, I mean, years go by and I was in and out of rehab, and I did multiple location changes, and I would look up things on the internet of how to get sober and how to not do this and how to, you know, I mean, it, that is just like torture for people like us, just that battle of just trying to put 30 days together, you know, I mean, and then coming in here and seeing people with years and stuff and being like, how the hell did they do that? I can't do it, you know? And like I said before, I just thought I didn't want it bad enough, you know? I thought it didn't get bad enough because apparently they were all doing something that I mean, either I didn't know or I mean, it wasn't in me. You know, and that was a real lonely place to be, and, you know, it just got worse and worse and worse. You know, I mean, I don't, it's like a big blur. I can't even take you through the rehab. I can't even take you through, you know, the location changes. I mean, all I can say is, you know, if I would go into these rehabs and I would learn things like people, places, and things are my problem, right? And so, sounds good. Let me change the place, you know, and I'll end up 400 miles away and in a worse situation, you know, like, just as bad, you know. I'm an alcoholic. You're gonna put me somewhere on the planet. I'm gonna find what I need to calm this head down. That's what's gonna happen. People, I'll change the people, right? Like I'll break up with the boyfriend, or I'll change the group of friends, or something like that. And then I feel like I am caught up in the same thing in about 20 minutes. You know, like it takes no time. Like my head's going, you know, and things. Things are, is something that's a little difficult, right? Because I thought coming in here, even this time I knew that people and places weren't the problem because they didn't keep me sober, they didn't get me drunk. But things, I thought I would never be able to, you know, see things that reminded me of what it was like. And our literature and our promises say that's just not true. You know, those 10-step promises, my problem is removed. You know, and that's contingent on my spiritual maintenance, but I can honestly say that you can't put something in front of me to trigger this head. That just doesn't work. You know, that's one of the most beautiful things, and that's one of, like, that's, I mean, that's baffling to me. You know, like, with the way I used to drink, to think, like, you can't trigger me if my spirit, if I'm on fit spiritual ground, like, that's amazing. You know, that's one of the coolest things about this. Anyway, so, you know, I guess I'm just going to tell you a little bit about what it was like that last day out there. So let's just back up a little bit. A couple years ago, I was in this recovery house, and, it didn't work out, you know. I was just back from my latest plan of getting sober, which was North Carolina, which didn't work. You know, I got off the plane back in Philly, and I was in an emergency room that night, you know. My parents just, they picked me up from from the airport, and I had these bags with me, and they dropped me off at Lower Bucks Hospital, and they said, see ya. And that was it, and I sat in that emergency room for hours until I got into a rehab. And as much as I really didn't want to be sober, I was so glad I was back home, you know? And I was so glad that I got to see my family again, because part of me didn't think that I was going to get to. And there was a lot of guilt about that, of like, you know, if I die out here, you know, my family will never be okay with that. That was nailed the way it was going in my head. So I was really happy to be back, and I was in this emergency room. I got into this rehab, and I had this roommate there, and she was this lady. She was old, she was maybe in her 50s, and she was awesome, man. She was really like into religion and stuff, and she had this Bible, and she would read it at night. And now, like I don't pray. You know, like, I'm not going to do it. Like, that's, it, you were going to say God at me, and it was like, okay. You know, like, let's just, I'm not even on step one yet. Like, chill out. So she said to me every night, like, did you say your prayers? And I'm like, no. And she's like, you better say your prayers. And I mean, like, after about three nights, I'm like, okay. You know, and I remember laying in bed in this rehab. This was my last rehab, and I remember not knowing this God. Maybe it was her God, or my, I don't know. I didn't know any God, and I didn't know anything about praying. You know, I remember actually literally laying in that bed and saying, God, like, it's unnatural for somebody like me. You know, that first prayer, that is not a natural thing to do. But I said, you know, I said, can you just help me to want this, you know? And I don't know if it happened the next day, but I said the same thing the next night. And one of those days, you know, I'm participating. I want to be sober, to the point where I promised myself. I said, you know what? I'm doing it this time. I'm not going back. Like, you know, I don't want to keep doing this to my family. So I made that promise, right? And here I am, and I think I got this willpower, right, where I'll get through any obsession, you know. So I'm praying every night, and it's working. Like, it's absolute insanity. It's working, right? It's like magic. And I get out of this rehab, and I go to this recovery house, and I went to these meetings where they didn't talk about having a relationship with God, and I stopped praying at night. And little by little, I'm leading the double. And then the triple life, and then I have my family over here, and then I have the recovery house here, and I have the friends that can't know each other, and I'm living the whole thing, and I'm sober, you know. And I remember being on the phone with my mom, sober, and saying to her, like, I don't know how I'm going to live another 10 years. She's like, what, are you going to kill yourself? And I mean, like, I was fairly suicidal, I guess, like, not to the point where it has been, but, you know, take it or leave it. And I was like, no, I'm not like that. But like, I don't know how people just live in this world, you know. I mean, it was like baffling to me, you know. And our book describes that, like. But I said that to her. It's like, you know, you hear a new person, and they're like talking right out of our literature, and they don't even know it. You know, they're talking about this restless, irritable, and discontent, and they have no idea that they're identifying with what we are so much sometimes. Like, and I just want to be like, here you go, this is what you are. Like, you know, but it's tough. But anyway, that I was there, you know. And one of those days, you know, I'm in this recovery house, and I leave. You know, I'm done. Somebody says to me, here you go, you can move into my house. I said, when? They said, whenever you want. I said, can I do it tonight? And they're like, I don't care, I guess. So I went home at like midnight and packed my stuff, and I was out. Like, that's it, I'm out, you know. Not only did I think, like, once, it's weird too, because like, I was convinced people, places, and things weren't necessarily gonna get me sober or anything, or make me drink again, but I was convinced they would get me happy or depressed, you know. So I figured, let's change the place and I'll be happy. And in days, I was sitting on my bed just crying, you know, and having no reason to. You know, my family's happy I'm back, and I'm happy to be back, and I'm sober, and I'm not waking up sick, and I'm just crying. You know, I don't even know why. And I did that for nights in a row, about four nights in a row before I picked up again. You know, after making this promise to myself in rehab, like, I'm not doing it again no matter what. You know, it was like, and then that was the really baffling thing, you know. I made this promise, and I was so sincere, and I knew I wanted it bad enough that time. You would think that time would stick, you know. You would think that time I would be serious enough to do it, but, you know, I mean, I can make all the promises I want to myself, like, but they don't mean anything, you know. I finally came in here and learned that lack of power was my dilemma, which is awesome, you know. I mean, if that's the problem, okay. Let's find some power. You know, how do I do that? And it teaches us how to do that. It's so simple. It really is. You know, it is not easy, and it's not natural for somebody like me to pray and to seek this God. But it really is. Like, it's simple stuff. You know, and I had no idea. My head would complicate it to no end. You know, but it was. It was simple. And so I picked up, and I went back on a nice little run, and it wasn't very long, and it wasn't insane, but again, you know, I mean, I'm living life like I'm living life, and I'm waking up sick again, and, you know, the whole thing, whatever, about a month and a half, maybe 2 months out there, and I fell out in my room, after this was, these people kicked me out of their house after like a week, by the way. You know, they're like, all right, come on now. So they tell me to leave because they're not alcoholics. You know what I mean? Like, they drink, but they don't drink like I drink. So when they see somebody like us put one in them and like, I'm off, man. Like, they're like, okay. Like, so they tell me to leave. So I leave. And I was back at my dad's house. And that's where, you know, about a month and a half, maybe 2 months out there, I fall out in my room. And my dad comes home from a meeting at about, like, 10 in the morning and finds me in my room, you know, as bad as it can get to find your daughter, I guess. I don't know. But I just remember waking up, and I remember saying, like, I'm not going to rehab, I'm not going to the hospital, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't work, you know. It's never worked before. And I mean, like, and what are they going to tell me, you know? So here's the plan. Here's the plan in my head, right? And this happened that day that I fell out. That was May 15th, 2013. And so the plan in my head now, moving forward in this day, is how do I convince them to let me stay here? I'm not going to go to rehab. I'm going to make everybody think I'm doing good for about 2 weeks, and then I'm just going to do what I want and just hide it better. Because you got to remember, like, being sober is not an option for me. You know, like, I already discovered that I cannot do this. You know, with all the sincerity in the world and the promise that I made to myself, I'm just incapable. So, so that's not an option. I have to find a better way to do this, right? That was where my head was at. And you know, and 2 weeks was what I was giving myself. I'm just gonna stay sober for 2 weeks. I've done that before. I can do it again, right? And so I'm at his house, and about 4 days in, the obsession hits. Like, I mean, it hits me like a ton of bricks. Like, it gets in there. It's not going until something shuts it up, and that something for me is a drink. You know, so I go and I try to make this happen. You know, there's what I needed just a couple doors down from me. And so I go and try to make it happen, and it didn't work. And I broke this kid's door banging on it. And so I got really scared, and I ran back home, right? And I ran back home, and I sat on my bed, and I just kind of broke down and started crying. And I know, like, you know, there's this part of the book, and it says, once in a while, where does it say? It says, he'll be unable to imagine life with or without alcohol. He will wish for the end. He will be at the jumping off point, right? And from that moment, like, I simply couldn't imagine living life sober, and I couldn't imagine going back trying to get what I wanted. There was no way that I wanted to live. Like, if I would have had a choice right there, I just would have died right there. You know, like, I didn't want to keep fighting anymore. Fight to be sober, fight to be drunk, whatever it was, like, I just wanted it done. You know, and I mean, that line right there, like, that describes that moment better than any words I've ever could have put it in. And I called my mom, you know, and they say, you know, God's, like, we have these moments, right, these God moments that aren't us, you know, and I called my mom, and I mean, like, of all the times people say, like, call me when you want to drink, like, okay, you know, I'm not going to do that. Well, I called her this time, you know, and I never do that, and it's crazy, too, because it's not like I wanted to be sober. I just didn't know what to do. I called my mom, and she said, there's this girl, and she wants to help you. Will you please call her? And I had been avoiding calling this girl because she was an AA, and because I didn't know her, and because I already had a sponsor with 12 years, and if my sponsor with 12 years can't keep me sober, why could this girl keep me sober, you know? So, but I did. I called her, and it was about like 10 or 11 at night. And before this, actually, the day where my dad found me, I had called that recovery house I was in before, and I said, you know, I messed up. Can I come back? And she said, I'll let you know when I have a bed open. Well, so 4 nights later, you know, my mom tells me to call this girl. I call her, and this girl says, she's, like, waiting for my call, it sounded like, you know? Like, she picked up the phone, and I said, it's Shannon. She says, oh, what's going on? Like, she knew it was, you know what I mean? Like, one of those things where it's, like, it was normal. And I kind of told her a little bit about my situation. And she says, what are you doing tomorrow? And I said, I don't know. I'm trying to go back to this recovery house. She said, what recovery house are you going to? And I told her, she said, no, you're not. I'm going to take you somewhere else. And so she said, I'll be there at 9:30 a.m. And she came to my house at 9:30 a.m. And she picked me up. She took me to the Stepping Stones. And I made a noon meeting there, right? And I don't know what they said. But I remember I walked up, and the girl from rehab a couple years ago was there, and she was sober. She was about 2 or 3 months sober, and she was different, you know. And this girl got me into a different recovery house that this other girl I'm telling you about, my sponsor at the time, she was in it. And that was the plan, you know. And the cool thing about that plan is, like, I didn't make it, you know. She just said, this is what you're doing. And I remember, you know, feeling that I don't have the energy, just tell me where I'm going, you know, and I stopped thinking for myself. And that was probably the best thing ever, you know, just when you don't assert your will. It's awesome, and it's tough. But anyway, so I go to this recovery house, and this girl that I'm telling you about, she says, do you want to read? And I'm like, I don't care. So she sits me on the couch, and she opens up our book, right? And she starts reading the doctor's opinion to me. And it's cool. And she read, you know, she talked to me about this concept of God. And I had that experience in rehab where I know prayer did something for me. And I didn't know about God, but I knew that it worked at that moment. So I was open to it, you know. But then, you know, she told me about that third step. And that third step, just like I felt that, you know, and I don't know, like, what words it was, but I remember her saying something like, something about, like my plan, like, I don't have to make that plan anymore, you know, and, like going through life, it's not my life to make plans for. Going through life, all I do is I ask God to take care of it, you know, and it was like a weight lifted off my shoulders almost, you know, like, when we have these, when I would think about, you know, the future and the money and how am I going to find a place to live and how am I going to this and how am I going to do this, and to think, like, all I really have to worry about, you know, is doing this work on the wall, doing these steps, practicing to the best of my ability. 9, 10, 11, and 12, you know. I don't want to take you through the rest of the steps because it's not special. It's my experience. It gave me peace of mind, you know. It's not my experience. It's my experience, and your experience is yours. And, you know, and I hope you have one. You know, I don't want to tell you about my amends. I want you to go make amends of your own and enjoy them, you know, and let them give you freedom because they gave me freedom, you know. I mean, I couldn't have imagined the way this stuff would just change the way I look at the world and the way I feel in this world, like a part of. Like when I come here tonight and I'm not shaking, you know, and I can have a conversation and not be scared if you're judging me. Like that's like this relief that I never thought would be possible in my life, you know. I thought sober was going to be this like cross to bear, this like... You know, when they say one day at a time, I thought I was going to have to battle a day at a time. And that didn't seem attractive, but this is, like, the most amazing way to go through life. Like, I know that for me. And like I said, like, it's not always easy because my nature, you know, is I'm an alcoholic, you know. But this action is, like, it's so simple, and it works. Like, it's amazing how it works. It's amazing when I watch it work in girls' lives, you know. And you start to see, like, you start to see their whole attitude change. The way they walk and the way they talk to people and the way they light up. Like, that's one of the most amazing things to just, like, witness it firsthand, you know. And again, like... It's cool that I felt that, but go have your own experience watching somebody recover, you know, like, go do it, you know, this is not in, you know, intellectualizing these steps and hearing them put really well from a speaker. It's about going out, you know, and helping the new person. It's about pausing throughout the day and asking God to remove that and then going and helping somebody else and watching how that just changes your day. You know, that's what this program is about. It's how are we living our lives, you know? I mean, do I have peace of mind throughout the day, you know? I really don't, like, it's funny, right? Because, like, I just read this recently, and it was, like, such a simple, I don't want to butcher it, so I don't want to say it, but, like, I love it. Like, it just describes it so well, right? Like, Emma Fox, he was talking about... the spirituality, right? It's like a baby, you know. I mean, walking in here with this whole spiritual thing without any practice of these steps, this spirituality in me, it was a baby. It was very small. I had this concept of God that was like a guy that wouldn't judge me, that played chess and was really smart. Like, that was my concept of God walking in here. I had this really small spiritual thing, right? And he says, you know, so the spirituality is a baby, and you feed it, and you nurture it, and you care for it. And it grows, you know, and it becomes a little stronger, and it keeps getting stronger, and you keep feeding it. And eventually, you know, it grows into an adult that ends up taking care of its mother, you know. So I feed this spirituality, you know, on a daily basis, and it grows to be so big that it ends up taking care of me throughout my day, you know. And the more I do give this stuff my time and dedication, it just takes care of me, you know? Like, it's not as difficult as it was when I was, you know, 2 weeks sober. To get me to stop and pray in the moment when I'm disturbed, it was really tough to find that discipline, you know? But now, like, I feel my stomach start to, like, turn over something, and immediately I turn to God. Immediately I picture God sitting right next to me, you know, asking him to remove it and just be there with me and who I can help. And I mean, it's the best way I can go through life, you know? You know, living in this 10, 11, and 12, like, I mean... You know, and if you're new in here, I don't know if anybody is, but if you are, you know, like, we're entering the spirit world by doing this work, right? Like, I all of a sudden learned that, like, material things, like, whether it be, you know, getting me happy or getting me sober, they're not going to do any of that. You know, I find God in, like, in other people, You know, I find them in you, and I find them in the girls that I get to work with. You know, like in this recovery house that I ended up going to, I'm still involved with that recovery house. I was there for a while. I was there for over a year. That was my home. It was like one of the first places I just felt like at total peace. You know, like I found God in this house. And I had nothing. Like, I walked in there, and the girl that sponsored me bought me a calling card because I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have cigarettes. I didn't have anything. But I'm going through this work, and I'm not feeling the pressure of the day. And you know, like, my family, I'm sitting down telling them I was wrong, asking them how I can make it right. And they're just so excited that I care enough to ask, you know. Going through this work, I couldn't have been happier at that point in time. It was awesome. You know, and I... Like I said, that's where I found God. I still get to be involved in that recovery house. I have girls that I work with in there, and I watch them like come alive, you know. And it's cool too because there's this one girl that doesn't. She couldn't tell you what one line in the book. You know what I mean? Like she reads it, she forgets it, right? But she takes the action in it, and she's like, oh my God, I don't know what's going on, but I'm not like sad and I'm not depressed, like. She does, you know what I mean? Like, she doesn't have to, like, memorize this stuff and intellectualize it. She just does the work she's told to, and she lives a different life, you know? It's the coolest thing. And I get to watch that, you know? And I love that. That's, like I said, it's, like, the best thing here. You know, and I mean, and today, it's funny, too, because, like, you know, I have a boyfriend, and you know, we have an apartment, right? So I have a car. I have all these things, and it's really cool, right? But it doesn't mean anything unless I'm doing the work, again, like unless I'm helping other people, and unless I'm like constantly pausing throughout my day, unless I'm taking a couple minutes in the morning, you know. And not only that, like I have to be open for these things to change, you know. Like in terms of how I meditate, you know, once I made this move, my meditation fell off a little bit. You know, I had to get into a practice that works for me again. Like that's the cool thing. Like this stuff is so not mechanical. You know, like find a meditation that works for you, and that's it. I get to tap into a power. You know, like you get to totally take these steps and make them your own practice in a way that gives you freedom, you know. And like I said about this, you know, where I was at before, these people that told me just don't drink no matter what. Like if that works, so be it. I don't care. You know what I mean? Like it didn't work for me. And I know, you know what I mean? It may work for some people. Your style of meditation may not work. But it doesn't matter. We get to find our own way to like go through this process. Together, like it's the coolest thing, you know. I tried, a couple months ago I started reading about these traditions too and how to bring them into our relationships and how like into our lives. And I mean, it's funny because if I find myself struggling with something, I either ask myself something about the steps, and if it's a relationship, sometimes I'll throw a tradition question in there. Some of the ones that I read when I was doing this thing, and it holds me accountable. You know, this whole program is to get me to think outside of myself and about your well-being. You know, I need a constant thought of others so that way I'm not constantly in my own inventory or this or that, driving myself nuts, you know. My objective, you know, is to be accountable, hold myself responsible, and then just to help somebody else, make it right, you know. I mean, this really, I mean, all this stuff, if you haven't taken these 12 steps, I mean, they may look complicated or even intimidating, but they're not, you know. We have such a simple process here, you know, but like above all else, you know, I need God to help me do it. I need God to do it for me. You know, I have another girl who, you know, I was just working with, and sometimes I forget, right? Because since day one in this room, since the first day I walked into AA, I had this sponsor that told me, you know, when she went home, she said, "Why don't you go pray? Why don't you go talk to God?" So since that day, I have been praying to a God every day. And I'm only saying that because that's just what I know. I really don't know what it's like to have almost a year and a half sober or any period of sobriety where I haven't kept in touch with God, you know? So there are certain things I don't know, you know? But I watch this girl and she's doing these steps and, you know, and it's not working or something. And I'm not getting it because I, you know, and the simplest question, you know, are you saying the third step prayer in the morning? And she said, well, no. And it's like, okay. You know, like that's the basics. You know what I mean? Like, you know, all this stuff in terms of making these amends and doing this inventory and helping somebody else, it's really good, but I need God first. I just need to ask him for some strength, you know. Otherwise, it's heavy. You know, it's on me and it's my plan and it's me asserting my will. You know, and you watch her just wake up and say this third step prayer and then keep going through this work. And you watch her just get lighter. You know, you watch her just say, like, oh. You know what I mean? Like, that's the missing piece of the puzzle, right? So, I mean, these steps are great, but these first three steps, you know, this is our foundation. This is mine. You know, that's why I do the rest of the work. And it's so important, you know? I don't really have much else, but thank you guys so much for having me out.